Day 402, Tuesday, May 7th. Ecclesiastes 1. Ecclesiastes 1:1-18 NKJV. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What profit has a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun? One generation passes away, and another generation comes, but the earth abides forever. The sun also rises, and the sun goes down, and hastens to the place where it arose. The wind goes toward the south, and turns around to the north. The wind whirls about continually, and comes again on its circuit. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. To the place from which the rivers come, there they return again. All things are full of labor, man cannot express it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. That which has been is what will be, that which is done is what will be done, and there is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which it may be said, see, this is new? It has already been in ancient times before us. There is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of things that are to come by those who will come after. I, the preacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem. And I set my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven. This burdensome task God has given to the sons of man, by which they may be exercised. I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and indeed, all is vanity and grasping for the wind. What is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be numbered. I communed with my heart, saying, look, I have attained greatness, and have gained more wisdom than all who were before me in Jerusalem. My heart has understood great wisdom and knowledge, and I set my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this also is grasping for the wind. For in much wisdom is much grief, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. Daily Deep Dive, the UCG reading plan states, after the statement of authorship in verse 1, the next two introductory verses spell out the problem of the book. Vanity of vanities in verse 2, a superlative expression, seems to denote utter emptiness. As noted earlier, the Hebrew word for vanity is hebel, which literally means breath or vapor. The idea is that there is nothing there to hold, which is why we see the word seven times paired with the phrase grasping for the wind. Some take hebel to imply meaninglessness, pointlessness or senselessness, the world seemingly being without rhyme or reason. Others opt for the sense of worthlessness, especially with the declaration of hebel being followed by the asking in verse 3 of what profit there is in this life. Still others take hebel here to mean fleeting or quickly passing. There could be this transitory sense in some of the occurrences of the word, particularly in Ecclesiastes 9:9, where emptiness or meaningless or worthlessness seems contrary to the point. But neither fleeting nor meaningless fits the occurrence of the word in lamenting unfair circumstances. For example, Ecclesiastes 8:14. Perhaps elusive or beyond grasping, i.e., incomprehensible or inscrutable, fits better there, but this meaning does not apply in the concluding statement in Ecclesiastes 12:8, which is parallel to Ecclesiastes 1:2. As much has been resolved by the end. So there may be different shades of meaning for hebel in the book. However, the Expositor's Bible Commentary takes hebel throughout the book to indicate frustration, not in the mere sense of minor dissatisfaction at hindrances but of having all attempts to understand or to find lasting success or meaning coming to naught, being always out of reach. That does appear to fit the various occurrences, and it also aligns with the meaning of vanity, futility, being seemingly all for nothing. The phrase all is vanity in verse 2 cannot include God or His word, so the all here is limited, apparently to life under the sun. Verse 3. This expression, used also in other ancient texts, occurs 28 times in the book, along with the variant form under heaven, which appears 3 times. Considering the context of these occurrences, the phrase refers to the limitations of physical life on this earth in the here and now, that is, while God and men dwell separately, with God in heaven and men under heaven. Man's eternal destiny includes life on the earth, ultimately in the New Jerusalem, but we will then be with God and not confined to the earth, as we will inherit the whole of creation, including the heavens. Moreover, the earth itself will be renewed, and life upon it will be positive in every way, as God ultimately intended. The frustration of life in this world as described in Ecclesiastes may well be what the Apostle Paul had in mind in Romans 8:20, for the creation was subjected to futility. The Greek word translated futility here in the New King James Version, vanity in the earlier King James Version, frustration in the New International Version, is matos, the same word used throughout the Greek Septuagint version of Ecclesiastes. Vanity or frustration in the created realm is the consequence of sin early on, first that of Satan and the angels who followed him and later that of man just after his creation and giving in to Satan. It was Adam and Eve's wrong choice in the Garden of Eden that subjugated humanity to the resultant problems of the world, with all sins following in their footsteps. As mentioned, the dilemma of Ecclesiastes 1:2, with Hebel perhaps including a sense of seeming worthlessness or pointlessness, leads into the key question of verse 3, what profit has a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun? In his Preaching the Word commentary volume Ecclesiastes, Why Everything Matters, 2010, Philip Ryken notes, the same question will come up again in chapter 3, what gain has the worker from his toil? Verse 9, the idea of gaining some profit will come up repeatedly as well. It appears nearly a dozen times in the book of Ecclesiastes, for example, Ecclesiastes 5:9. The word gain, or profit, Hebrew yitron, is a commercial term ordinarily used in the context of business. The goal is to turn a profit as the reward for one's labor. Gain is the return on investment for hard work. So, the preacher asks the question that people have about every job, is it worth it? Am I really accomplishing anything? What will I have to show for all my toil? P. 24. Solomon is essentially asking, what good is this life? What's the point? As mentioned in our introduction, to see what Solomon is aiming at throughout this first section, 1:1:2:26, we can look ahead to the section conclusion, Ecclesiastes 2:24-26. We will consider it more when we come to it, but in Ecclesiastes 2:24, the first occurrence of the book's refrain, we are informed that there is indeed good in our labor or efforts that we are to enjoy from God's hand. Verse 26 tells us that this blessing is ultimately for those who are good or righteous in His sight, denoting His followers. But that fact is not yet in sight for the reader in chapter 1. Following the 3-verse introduction or prologue, we see that Solomon in the first subsection presents in poetic form a bleak perspective of life in this world, verses 4-11. His observations about the natural order impress on the reader the sensation of futility. First, a person's time upon the earth is fleeting and seems to make no impact. People come and go, but the earth and its processes continue on and on, seemingly indifferent to man's presence. Second, these processes themselves can seem monotonous and meaningless, accomplishing nothing, such as the river constantly flowing to the sea but never filling it. If characteristic of nature, where does that leave fleeting human life? Man deems himself important on the earth, and God even decreed man's dominion over it. Genesis 1:28, Psalm 8. So what's going on? Man cannot express it, and Ecclesiastes 1:8 means that people have nothing meaningful to say in response. They can't explain it. The rest of the verse seems to say that despite all they see and hear, it is never enough to satisfy their desire to comprehend it. The benefit sought in verse 3 is not to be found in this incessant restlessness. Verses 9 to 10 increase the sense of despair by saying there is nothing new under the sun. It should be recognized that this is not speaking of particular tangible items, such as new inventions. We of course have many electronic gadgets today that did not exist in the past. The statement, rather, is a general one about the ways of the world. Just as nature's processes continue unabated, so do the ways of people on the earth, fleeting though they are. The New American Commentary explains, the fundamental events of life, birth, marriage, work, death, etc., remain unchanged. The desire for something new is the desire for something that alters the nature of life in the world. Cars, computers, and jet airplanes may have made some things easier and faster. For us, however, as for our predecessors, the sun rises and sets, the rivers run their courses, and people continue their endless quest for fame, power, and happiness even as they move steadily toward death. Garrett, note on verses 9 to 11. Verse 11 seems most likely to refer to not remembering people, as in the NIV, rather than not remembering things. The Bible in basic English renders it, there is no memory of those who have gone before, and of those who come after. Considering the passing away of generations in verse 4, we should understand this to mean after some time has gone by. We may know various facts about some famous people in history, but we don't remember them as we do people we know today. Their names may or may not be remembered in the school books, but they are thought of as little more than characters of fiction, cut off from the new generations who have their own lives to live. Expositors, write, note on Ecclesiastes 2:12-16. Moreover, the vast majority of people never achieve lasting fame, while those who do gain nothing by it, knack, note on Ecclesiastes 1:11. Solomon is highlighting man's plight to show the need for a solution, and he will present that in due course, explaining that the answer lies in a proper relationship with God. This means living according to the whole Bible. The Preaching the Word commentary states, to see things under the sun is to look at them from ground level. It is to take an earthly point of view, leaving God out of it for the moment. But of course this is not the only way to look at things, or even the right way to look at them. There is a God in heaven who rules over the sun. Therefore, we are not limited to the terrestrial, in our perspective or in help in living. This does not mean that if we believe in God all our troubles will be over or that we will never again feel the weariness and vanity of life under the sun. For one thing, believers often forget to remember God, and when we do, we are right back under the sun again. But Ecclesiastes does open up the possibility of an above-the-sun perspective that can bring joy and refreshment to life as we learn everything matters. Ecclesiastes, p. 31. Indeed, the full biblical revelation shows that there is a way out of the monotony to experience something truly new that will last. The New American Commentary further points out on Ecclesiastes 1:11. This passage is not a contradiction to the gospel but a call for it. The world is in bondage, and humanity is unable to explain, find satisfaction in, or alter it. Only the Word, who came into the world from above, can open the way of understanding and escape. John 8:23, John 8:31-32. He has done a new thing. He has created a new covenant, given the new birth, new life, and a new commandment. Jeremiah 31:31 to 34. He gives a new name that will last forever. Everything else is old and passing away. When we are changed to immortal, glorified beings at the return of Jesus Christ, our restless ears and roving eyes will be fully and finally satisfied. Our senses will be saturated with the glory of God. This is something to remember whenever we are frustrated or angry or sad or disappointed with everything in life that is getting broken, falling apart, or going wrong. Remember that this life is not our final existence. We were made for a better world. The very fact that we are weary of life is pointing us to the only God who can satisfy our souls. PTW, pages 32 to 33. Solomon now turns in this second subsection of the first major section to his own experience in grappling with the vanity of this life. His position as a great king to whom God had given greater wisdom than anyone else, Ecclesiastes 1:12, Ecclesiastes 1:16, made him uniquely suited to explore the issue. Still, he found the study a great burden, verse 13, and deemed everything in this life to be, as stated in verse 14, vanity and grasping for the wind. This latter expression occurs in the Bible only in Ecclesiastes, here found 9 times, 7 times in conjunction with vanity. The ESV Archaeology Study Bible notes on verse 14 that this recalls the words of the early Sumerian epic, Gilgamesh, only the gods, live, forever under the sun. As for mankind, numbered are their days, whatever they achieve is but the wind, Anat, 79. In verse 15, a proverb, the statement what is crooked cannot be made straight does not mean that no problems can ever be straightened out today. The reference is to all the works that are done under the sun, verse 14, the totality of the human experience. Thus, no amount of investigating or using the resources of earth will ever straighten out all that is crooked, twisted, perverted, or turned upside down. NKJV Study Bible, note on verse 15. Indeed, God has subjected the world to adversity because of man's wrong choices, and his will cannot be contravened. Compare Ecclesiastes 7:13. The second line of Ecclesiastes 1:15, and what is lacking cannot be numbered, means either that missing elements in the puzzle cannot be taken into account in trying to solve it, because you don't know what you don't know, or that the deficiency of elements essential to a solution is too vast to comprehend. Solomon sets out to know wisdom and the contrary approach of madness and folly, verse 17. This exploration, introduced here, is reflected on further in Ecclesiastes 2:12-17. As with other pursuits, it proves futile. In the proverb of Ecclesiastes 1:18, Solomon confesses that wisdom and knowledge, despite their advantages, bring pain and grief. Consider that the more we learn about the world, the worse we realize its condition to be. As the Preaching the Word commentary notes, children often wish they knew more about some of the things their parents talk about. Eventually we get older and supposedly wiser, but by then we wish we could go back to the innocence of childhood. This is why people say that ignorance is bliss. The more we know about things, the more trouble it brings, Ryken, p. 43. Also, it is often recognized that the more we know, the more aware we are of how much we don't know. It's utterly frustrating. The answers to the big questions of life elude even the brightest minds. The same commentary says, if it all sounds hopeless, this means the writer is achieving his purpose. Remember that he is showing us the world from an earthly perspective, the best thinking that man can do on his own. P. 43, the ending quote taken from Derek Kidner, The Message of Ecclesiastes, The Bible Speaks Today series, 1976, p. 31. A problem for us in reading Solomon's discussion of wisdom here is that we immediately think of ultimate godly wisdom as found in God's Word, the wisdom that is from above, James 3:17. But Solomon had a vast store of earthly wisdom and knowledge to draw from in considering man's condition. As author Tommy Nelson states, now the wisdom Solomon is talking about in context is not the wisdom of God and His Word. It is wisdom derived from exploring human knowledge, philosophy, religion, psychology, sociology, history, logic, and rhetoric, the best ideas that man has invented or discovered. But in the end, all an educated man can do is die an educated failure. All the learning in the world won't help you change the human heart. A life well lived, a study of the Book of Ecclesiastes, 2005, p. 24. The Expositor's Bible Commentary notes in its introduction to Ecclesiastes that the book is not against serious thinking. It is itself a deep and thoughtful work. But it demands a recognition of the limitations of human philosophy. For example, Ecclesiastes 3:11, Ecclesiastes 8:16-17. Certainly Solomon does at length turn to godly wisdom in instructing us to fear God, obey Him and receive His blessings in routine living. Yet why didn't he realize that to start with? After all, Solomon grew up with the truth under the tutelage of his father David. He did not start with a godless mindset. Indeed, God gave him increased wisdom and understanding. But godly knowledge and wisdom are not enough for rationalizing life's problems and coping well with them. We need God's direct intervention in our hearts and minds and in our circumstances. Even with the spiritual perspective we may have now, it is not easy to endure the difficulties of life, and we can't understand all the reasons behind what we and other human beings have to go through. Sometimes we may throw up our hands and ask what is the point of this present life. Yet over time we come to trust more deeply in God's guidance and care even though we don't know all the answers. Moreover, in Solomon's case it seems likely that he had already begun his drift away from God when he was pondering these issues. So he likely had to relearn some spiritual lessons. In any case, Solomon's wisdom and knowledge carried him only so far. Hard questions and circumstances remained unresolved, and he initially tried to tackle these intellectually. Equipped though he was, however, the effort proved ultimately fruitless. End.